Welcome to the First Intuition Podcast. It's National Talk Money Week, and that's exactly what we're doing on this week's show. Myself and Dave will talk through personal finances and share some hints and tips. If you need further advice, I've put some links in the show notes.
Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the First Intuition Podcast. As always, we've got a live studio audience in front of us tonight on Zoom, and I'm joined by my friend and colleague, Dave Malthouse. Good evening, Dave.
Evening, Ben. How are you this week?
Yeah, really good, Dave. Having a good week. Lots of stuff going on. Seems to be a bit of a lull in the courses between tuition heading into revision phase for big exam sittings in December. But we've got lots of AAT students that are also coming to the end of their first module and booking exam slots. I wish everybody well. If you're listening to this and you are booking exams or sitting exams in the near future, really, really good luck. What about you? What's happening in your world over in Chelmsford this week?
Well, I was actually in your neck of the woods on Monday. I was in Cambridge, so I visited the offices in Cambridge, had a meeting with some of our colleagues up there, and had to get my head around your new kind of working regime. And I mentioned to you earlier, I was caught at one point where I just popped off to the toilet as you normally would do. And then I realised when I was there, I didn't have a face mask with me. And I know that you've got the face masks in corridors rules in terms of going around your labyrinth network of passages in the centre. So I had to sneak back to make sure that I wasn't spotted by anyone to get back to my chair. So it felt a bit like an episode of Squid Games where I had to go back, not detected by the all-seeing people. Unfortunately, I did it, and I wasn't. It didn't go the way of Squid Games, thankfully.
We have had some notification. Actually, Cambridgeshire is one of the higher rates of COVID across the country at the moment. And there's been some messaging to educational establishments. My daughter's school is back to wearing face masks between lessons. And that's what we are putting in place for our students in the building in Cambridge, wearing face masks to enter and to walk around. But once they're in their classroom with their tutor for the lesson, the face mask can come off if you want to. So I think we're just being ultra cautious, but rightly so, because COVID is still out there and it is still potentially going to disrupt people's studies. And the more we can do to try and avoid people sharing the virus, the better, in my opinion.
And other than that, it's been relatively normal a week. I did this weekend. I finally got back to playing hockey. So after a 3-month absence, and I had the opportunity to play in the same team as my son. So my son and I both turned out for the men's fourth team, which was really, really nice. And then this week, the team sheets have been announced. I'm in the fourth team. My son is back in his rightful place and he's playing for the second team. So I think that may well be one of the last times that I actually get to play a competitive game of hockey with my son. So that was a nice thing to do. So looking forward to playing again this week. It's nice to not be injured and to run around. And hopefully, Ben, in the new year, you're going to be back to fitness and hopefully playing some football.
Back to fitness. To continue last week, you'll have probably heard, if you listen to the podcast, you'll have definitely heard, it was half term. My daughters were going to the indoor rock climbing in Cambridge. Brilliant session at Clip and Climb they had on Friday afternoon. I couldn't partake because my leg is still in a boot and it's not advised for me to do anything as adventurous as rock climbing at the moment. But it is literally 5 minutes from the office. And so I was able to pop in. I was able to do some marking and they then came and picked me up. So everybody had a good afternoon out in Cambridge. And Dave, there is a race up to press the button at the top, which they love doing against each other and against a couple of friends that they took with them for the indoor clip and climb. So a successful mission and well worth checking out. Fantastic. Right. Well, topic of conversation for this evening is talking money and personal finance. And this coincides with the podcast. We record the session, but we release the podcast in the following week. And so next week, as we're recording this, the 8th to the 12th of November is National Talk Money Week, an initiative put in place by the Money and Pension Services, a government-supported organisation, to get employers, to get educational providers, to get families talking about money. Dave, why do you think it's important for people to talk about money and any potential issues they are having with their own personal finances?
I guess, first of all, Ben, we should probably let everyone know that we are in no way could be considered financial advisors. So, you know, anything that we say, you know, it should really be backed up with some kind of professional advice. But I think of, in terms of why we should talk about money, I think money is one of those taboo subjects that we're almost encouraged not to talk about, it in the same way that it has always been kind of a taboo subject to talk about your mental welfare. And it's something that we're supposed to not talk about. And it's rare that people do talk about problems that they have. But I know that lots of people that I come in contact with do have issues with managing their money. And as with those things we talked about with mental health, I think that sharing those issues and actually being open and talking about things does make things better. It can kind of relieve a lot of pressure. I think that talking about money means people become educated and understand more about money. And I know a lot of people are kind of scared about personal finance, but understanding money, talking about it, can really empower you to make better decisions, to maybe take less risky financial decisions if you understand, you know, how money works and you know, how investing works and things like that. It can, I've seen money drive wedges between people. I think, Ben, you've got some information about that a bit later on, but money can put real pressure on a relationship. If there are money worries, it can, you know, drive a wedge between people. I also think that the way that we behave around money does impact on our children. That's something I'm very conscious of, and I really want my children to have a healthy relationship with money and understand how to manage money. And that's something that I think is really important. If we don't talk about it, how are our kids going to know, how are they going to understand it? And finally, I know Ben, you and I talked a little bit earlier about, you know, our own personal relationships with money. And there have been times where I have felt incredibly stressed about, you know, my financial affairs, and it can seem like there is nowhere to go. Now, talking with a friend, understanding what's going on, then you can come to solutions. So I think it is an important subject to talk about. What about you, Ben?
I think it's really important. I'm really pleased we can use the podcast and the forum to showcase it. I think it's a good initiative, and I hope actually it's out there next week during National Talk Money Week on the media, in the news. I think money problems are embarrassing. Let's not beat around the bush. It's embarrassing to confide in someone and say, I'm struggling. Money's not working out for me at the moment. I think more so if you are a finance professional, if you are an accountant, a student accountant, actually to admit I'm pretty rubbish dealing with my own money is quite embarrassing and against what people would naturally presume that we are good at. But I know, myself included, lots of accountants and qualified accountants who are pretty rubbish at handling their own finances. So I think part of it is who we are. I also think an interesting angle, you might be a person that a friend or family member comes to looking for some help and support. They will think, oh, Ben, you're an accountant. You must be good with finances. Can you just chat through with me where I might be going wrong? I think you're exactly right, Dave, to caveat that with, we are not financial advisors. You guys out there are not financial advisors. You're student accountants, you're studying, we're qualified accountants, but we've got to be very careful of that line between helping people, but then going beyond and giving advice that needs to be regulated. So just be careful there personally. It's great if someone comes to you and you can listen to their problems, but please, as Dave caveated what we can do, you need to protect yourselves there and give that kind of health warning up front.
So you, Ben, I was just thinking that we talked earlier and you know, a little bit about our own, I guess, historical relationship with money. And I think this is quite normal, but when you're quite young and you've got your first job and you get a pay packet, you know, how would you say at that point in time that your financial management looked? How did it work for you?
It was relatively non-existent to start with, Dave. Yep. I can vividly remember actually getting my first payslip when, yep, I got my first job, left college, got my first job as an accountant, got my payslip. The money went into my bank. Brilliant. And I went out and bought a set of golf clubs. Bang, straight away. because I'm an accountant now and accountants play golf. I have still got the golf clubs in my garage. I've probably used them about 12 times. I'm not a regular golf player, never was, but it felt like the thing to do. And I got some money, go and blow it. I very quickly had got a new car. I found people were offering me lots of opportunities to borrow money. I was quite a good target. I was offered credit cards for the first time in my life. When I went to look at cars, the salesperson was talking me into buying a slightly better model car and taking out some kind of finance package, all leverage from the fact I was now earning. And that is quite a scary position to be in. I'm quite happy to admit I had credit cards that were building up debts and I wasn't paying them off as people would usually advise you to do. I bought a car on finance, and it was really only when I got with Ellie, my then girlfriend, my now wife, and we started looking to buy a house together that we really had to sit down and have that open conversation with each other. What have you got? What have I got in our background? And what do we need to do to sort this out? And you mentioned some stats, Dave, and relate the relationship guidance experts say that money worries is the biggest cause of strain on relationships between boyfriends, girlfriends, husbands, wives.
I can well believe it. And as always, Ben, whenever you say something about you growing up, training, things like that, I then come along and say, sounds a lot like me. Because you're absolutely right, and I you know, kind of went to university, which I, and you know, at universities, kind of the first chance you have to be financially free, and you know, the banks are offering you, you know, loans. You've got student loans you can take out. You've got, you know, credit cards that they'll offer you, 0% overdraft that you get offered. You get offered all of this free money, and then you come out of university and you've got a big bag of debt. But then you get a job, and then suddenly the banks are offering you even more money because, oh, you need a car. Yeah, of course we can finance a car for you. Oh, you need a credit card with a bigger limit. There you go. Oh, because you're a graduate, we can now put you on this bank account that's got a bigger overdraft. And the reality is that when you are 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, you want to go out, you want to do things, and there seems to be almost an endless supply of money to allow you to do it. It's only when you wake up a little bit later on, maybe with a bit of a hangover, that you realize that actually this debt needs to be repaid. And that's something that I don't think you get enough education about. It sounds stupid, doesn't it? That, you know, an accountant didn't realize or doesn't realize that money you borrow needs to be paid back. And it can look really daunting when you look at, all right, I've got these credit cards that need to be paid off. I've got an overdraft over here. I've got a bit of a student loan going on over here. I don't earn enough money to pay all these off. How do I actually do it? And it can be very, very dark until, as you say, sitting down with your wife, I imagine that suddenly made it feel a lot better. You know, it's probably a difficult conversation, but feels a lot better to share it and then say, right, this is what we need to do.
Definitely. And it is awkward talking about it. Starting that conversation is worrying. It is awkward. I saw some stats, 9 out of 10 adults admit it is hard to talk about money. And I would agree with them. And I was lucky that me and Ellie sat down. We were very open and honest with each other. We went through everything that we'd got, all of the outstanding debts, the credit cards, the hire purchase. We made the decision to sell one car and share a car to pay off some of the finance, which helped us get our mortgage. But equally, I know friends who are in relationships that have not been honest with each other about money. And I can tell you now, it's caused much bigger problems further down the line when things come out. And you're nodding, Dave. I'm sure you're in a similar
scenario. I've heard exactly the same things as well, where 3 years into a relationship, suddenly a debt comes out of the woodwork that's been there all along, but someone's been reluctant to confess that they have that debt, and then suddenly it's a shock and people have been hiding it. Why have you been hiding it? And it just generates a whole other argument. And again, it's embarrassment. I'm embarrassed that I had to borrow this money. I'm embarrassed that I owe all of this money. I don't want to admit it, and I try and hide it for as long as possible. But you're right, as with all of these things, a problem shared, as they say, isn't it? It really is, you know, the best thing seems to be open about those things.
So there's lots of resources, there's lots of help, there's lots of support available. For guys with us live tonight, in the chat box, I've put a link to the Talk Money Week website, where there are lots of free resources, there are packs you can download, there are particular areas you can go and explore. And for podcast listeners, I'll put a link to that in the show notes, so you can go and follow that, you can find it. Hopefully, there are things there There are guides to start the conversation. How can you raise this with your family, with your friends, with your partner? There are some tools on there that you can use, and there are references and links to other organizations that can support you. But me and Dave wanted to just start the conversation and hopefully share with you, without giving any financial advice, but share with you some thoughts we've had on hints, tips of maybe where to get started with helping you sort out your own personal finances. So Dave, you had some ideas when we exchanged emails earlier in the week. What do you think people can do to practically start helping manage their personal finance?
Well, I'm in a far better position now than I was 20 years ago in terms of my relationship with money and the way that I manage finance. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that I've grown up and had kids, and it's not just me, I've got other people to think about. But there are certain things that I still do now that I do now that I think I could have done 20 odd years ago. And there are certain things I do now that I do on an annual basis. I'm going to go through one of the things that I do on an annual basis. Now, I usually do this in January because it's new year, new start. Is first of all, do an audit of my expenditure. Now, it's not as bad as it sounds, because it used to be the case that you'd say, all right, if I look at my bank statement, I drew out £100, and where did I spend that £100? I haven't got receipts for it. So I've got this miscellaneous black hole of where I spent money. Nowadays, I can't remember the last time I drew money out of the bank, my bank account, because everything is chip and pin. It's tapping my card everywhere. So my bank statement is just a brilliant cash book for me of where did I spend all of my money. So download your bank statements. And I would go for, say, 3 months worth of bank statements. Hey, don't go any longer than that, because it'll take you forever. And if you just go for a month, well, you probably, you know, you've caught a month where some things are in it, but other things might not. And what we're trying to do is we're trying to work out, where are you spending money? So on that bank statement, where are you spending money? And against every item, you should be asking the question, do you need it? Do you use it? Okay, so did you need the thing that you bought? If you needed the thing that you bought, brilliant. Okay. If you bought something and, you know, you don't use it, then, you know, that's a bit of a problem. Why did we actually have it? So, but first thing is, do we need it? Do we use it? And I one of the things that a lot of businesses are really, really good at doing nowadays is tying you into regular payments, tying you into some kind of subscription. That's one of the big ones that I would look out for. So, yeah, Ben, what kind of subscriptions do you think that you have at the moment, that companies take money straight out of your account? They don't ask for it, just come straight out of your account.
At the moment, I haven't got a gym membership, and okay, just as well with my leg, because that money wouldn't be going out. But I know that's a source that lots of people are tied into gym memberships, and there's a contract where the money's being drawn out.
Absolutely. So do you use that gym? So if you've got a gym membership, ask yourself, do you use the gym? Okay, and then go into it a bit more. Okay, yeah, you do use the gym. How often? Okay, I'll go there twice a month. Now, does twice a month justify the 60 quid that you're paying every month for that gym membership? You know, would you be better off just going pay as you go to any other gym? Okay, so think a little bit about, do you use it enough to justify the cost? What other subscriptions have you got coming out of the Bullman bank account?
One of the regular ones and the bigger ones are different television and streaming services.
So we have Netflix, do we?
I think we've got Netflix. We had Disney Plus, but I canned that a few weeks back. We use Now TV a lot because we haven't got Sky at home, but I quite like Now TV because we can download and watch Sky movies on there, or Sky Entertainment, or occasionally I go and pay Now TV for Sky Sports subscriptions if there's a particular match or something I want to watch on there. I think we all got sucked into those a bit more during lockdown, didn't we? Because we were at home a lot. I could justify it then because, well, I'm not spending money going out, so actually we've got a bit more money that maybe we can allocate to those streaming services. But you're exactly right, Dave. They get you by locking you in. And if you don't spot that money still going out, it can be completely wasted money if you're not using the services that you are paying for.
Absolutely. So I have Netflix, as you'd expect. I've got a number of streaming services that I subscribe to. I also have other subscriptions. I don't. Do you have the? Actually, no. You would not have the Razorblade subscription that I have. Subscriptions. But again, it's, you know, you subscribe to these things at a point in time when it seemed like a good idea. Is it still a good idea? Do you need it? Do you use it? Okay, if you don't need it, don't use it. Cancel it, and just be ruthless with those things. So first thing is, you know, look out for subscription, things like that. Then I would also look at, are there trends that you can see? You know, when you look through 3 months bank statements, you're going to see certain places where you spend money quite a lot of the time. So my bank statement, Tesco, absolutely loads of Tesco. Now, my family need to eat, so I do need to spend money on Tesco. But when it comes to some weeks where I've gone to Tesco 5 times, that's just me being lazy and going to have lunch and buying it at Tesco's rather than making it myself. So if we spot trends like that, where you're spending a lot of money in a shop, buying something on a regular basis, is that really the best way to get that stuff? Now, I don't know if that rings any bells with you, Ben, or are you really good with how you eat?
You will love this, Dave. I've mentioned her a couple of times. I love her to bits, Ellie. She's a much better accountant than I am, my wife. And I will regularly come home and my credit card or the bank statement will be on the side in the kitchen. And she'll have got a highlighter pen out and highlighted Costa Coffee, Costa Coffee, Costa Coffee, Costa Coffee. For those of you that know where our centre is based in Cambridge, we are right in the middle of, there is a Costa opposite. When I go in regularly, I take the train and I have to walk past a Cafe Nero and another coffee shop. And habitually, I will just go in and buy coffees. And quite often, I will text a couple of the other tutors and say, I'm just in Costa. Do you want me to pick you anything up on my way into the office? And I'm not saying that should stop. And Ellie is not saying that should stop. Please don't think she is telling me I can't have a coffee when I would like one. But I think she's making the point that those few pounds here, few pounds there on a cup of coffee over the course of a month, and then scarily over the course of the year, can build up to quite a considerable amount of money.
Yeah, because how much are you spending on a Costa, Ben?
I have to say it probably gets up to £3-4. I'll quite often look in the cakes that they've got there and think, oh, that tiffin looks quite nice. And maybe I've missed breakfast this morning, so I'll grab one to scoff on the way into the office. Yeah, can quite easily then be £7 or £8 a time in Costa. Yep.
So if you were looking conservatively then at £5 a day, that's £25 over the course of a week. You know, yep. You're looking at £100-125 a month. You know, you're looking at £1,200 a year. Now, definitely. You look at that and say, no, I love my coffee as well. I love my coffee. But, you know, when I worked in your office in Cambridge 10 years ago, I was spending a lot of money on coffee every single day. And I ended up buying my own cafetiere and getting my own ground coffee and bringing it to the office. And people would tell me, oh, why are you doing that? It's really expensive. It's a hell of a lot cheaper than going to Costa every day and buying a coffee. And that's just one of those things. You spend a lot of money. You know, do you need it? Do you use it? Can you get it cheaper somewhere else? The reality is that if you make your own coffee and make it properly, it's so much nicer than shop-bought coffee. It's so much nicer that you just need to learn what it is you're making, how to make it, what the correct methodology is, and you'll get yourself a better coffee and you'll save an absolute fortune. Okay, for me, it's lunches. Lunches are the big thing. It's like I'm in a hurry in the morning. I rush into work. I haven't got any lunch. I'll just pop out. And before I know it, I've spent a tenner on lunch. Okay, it's really, really easy to do. So for me, that's one that, you know, when I spot that cropping up a lot in my bank statement, that's right. I need to actually make sure that I'm making my own lunch, okay, or that I've got some kind of strategy to not spend 10 quid a pop and actually buy something a little bit more reasonable. Leftovers that you've had from tea the night before, bringing them into work, make sure you utilize the resources that you've got. So do all of those things. Look at the things that you can avoid or you can change. Next step is you're left then with the things that you absolutely have to have. It's the things that you have to have are listed on your bank statement. Your next task is to look at those things and say, can I get them cheaper? Can I get them any cheaper? And if I was speaking to you 6 months ago, Ben, I'd say, check your electricity bill, check your gas bill. Can you get a better tariff? Now, I think at the moment with energy prices spiking, energy companies aren't offering any decent discounts right now. So that one's probably off the table. But think about things like your car insurance. Now, when you had your car insurance renewal, did you check that it was a good quote? If not, you're throwing money away. Because car insurance policies tend to go up every single time you get a renewal notice through, and there's almost certainly going to be a cheaper offering out there. If you're not looking at that, you're throwing money away. Look at your mobile phone bill. I'll guarantee whatever mobile phone tariff you're on, there's a cheaper one out there that you could have. It's a monitor your things like mobile phone. You talked earlier about having Sky. I was astounded but when it happened to me. But if you tell Sky that you've reached the end of your contract and you're leaving, they will offer you discounts to stay. If you just stay paying the same amount of money, you're throwing cash away. I actually wanted to leave Sky, and I went through the process of telling them that I was leaving. I had a 30-day period whereby the contract was still live until it ended. And they pretty much every day were contacting me by phone or contacting me by email by offering, saying they don't want to see me go. And first of all, they said, oh, we'll give you a 10% discount. The next week it was 20%. By the time it was a couple of days to go, they were offering me a 60% discount on my subscription to Sky. It wasn't enough to stay because my wife hated having sport on in the house all the time. So we had to get rid of it. But they will offer you those kind of discounts. So though it's can you get that thing cheaper? And this, yeah, what is there to lose by phoning up Sky and saying subscription's too expensive for me at the moment, I need to reduce my costs, can you help me? And you know, they don't want to lose you as a customer, so you will get things slightly cheaper. Now, at the end of doing all this, where you go through your bank statement, you've gone through all these items and looked at, can I get them cheaper, do I need them, can I cancel them, I do an exercise of how much money have I saved. By going through all this activity, how much money have I saved? And at the end of a day, I think my best was I saved just over £600. And that was through just spending one day looking at the items on my bank statement and can I get them cheaper? Can I cut them out? £600 for a day's worth of work, less than a day's worth of work. That to me is a pretty good return. That's, you know, as good a day's work wage that I have ever earned in my life. And I think that you'll probably find the same. If you do that audit of your bank statement, you're going to find that there's a huge amount of money you'll be able to save. You know, over the course of a year, you're not going to save it all in, it's not going to be 800 quid coming into your account tomorrow. It will be spread out over the course of a year, but that's a massive saving. And it is, you know, in my view, it's probably from a financial perspective, the single day of the year that I earn most money. I don't earn that kind of money on a daily basis, you know, in my day job, but you can earn that amount of money by doing that audit of a bank statement.
Excellent idea. Any other tips that you've got, Dave, or any other things that you think students could maybe go away and look to do to practically help with their finances?
Okay, so first one is do that audit. And that's regardless of who you are, regardless of whether you are in a position where you're financially distressed, shall we say, or whether you are fairly comfortable and you're actually, you know, not in financial worries. I still think it's a worthwhile exercise to do because you don't want to overspend. You don't want to spend money where you don't need to. The next thing, and this is going to appeal to the accountants, spreadsheet it. Build yourself a spreadsheet. And build a spreadsheet of your cash budgets. And the way that I set mine up is you start at the top and say, cash in. How much money do I get in on a month? And then underneath it's cash out. Where do I spend money? And the way that I do it is I say cash in, cash out. And I've got my mortgage that needs to be paid. I've got insurance that needs to be paid. I've got water bills. I've got council tax. I list all of those. And then at the bottom, you've got a number. And fingers crossed, that number is a positive number that you've got more money. More money coming in than you have going out. If not, that's when I would suggest that you need to see a professional because that's not something that I can really help you with. A lot of people leave it there, but that's not the most fun because the most fun with a spreadsheet then is to highlight those cells, click and drag them across the page as far as you can, and you can do a 5, 10, 15, 20 year forecast by repeating all of those months one after the other. And then what you see is that, okay, I've got a forecast, you know, cash surplus of £120 at the end of this month. But when you build it up over 10 years, that number becomes really substantial. So then you start to see, well, you know, this is what my financial position could look like in kind of 10 or 15 years. And that really opens your eyes to, if I make these changes now, that's where I can be. Okay. And usually people are blown away by the impact that these, you know, that little surplus month after month after month can have. Now, one thing that I would warn, and the first time I did this, I got super excited because I did it up to retirement age. And I'd forecast for loads of years. And then I got really excited and I'd done crazy things. I'd like put little percentage increases for an inflationary wage rise. And I built loads of crazy stuff in it. And then at the end, I went to my wife and said, look, I think when we retire, I reckon I could be a millionaire. And she was kind of like, no, you couldn't. And I was like, look at that. I've done the forecast. And she looked through the forecast and said, you've missed something out from there. And I said, what have I missed out? And she said, well, you've missed out any kind of holiday. And you're either going to have to factor in a holiday every year, or you're going to have to factor in a very expensive divorce in a couple of years, because I'm not living without going on holiday. So put holidays in. And then she said to me, and you've also forgotten food, because I had forgotten food in there. And when you put food and holidays in there, you're not quite a millionaire in that kind of time frame. But it is a really good exercise. Cash in, cash out. Make sure someone else takes a look at it. And the things that people always miss out is they miss out having fun. And I missed out having fun. I missed out going on holiday as something that, you know, I need to do for my own sanity. So put a bit of fun in there and then see what your financial position is. Fast forward for a number of years and see how amazing it looks. If it's negative today and it's negative next month, that's where you're going to have to seek some kind of professional help. And I know that we're going to put some links in the show notes to the kind of people that we can contact. But do you do that, Ben?
At risk of sounding like a budgeting class, which is far more up your street than mine.
Yeah.
No, I don't. I probably should. But I think when I was listening to you, one of the things then is, so once you're then at the end of that first month, do you or would you recommend going and actually updating it for the actuals? Because your best estimate of what might have happened is clearly where you're going to have missed some bits. So it's one thing having your forecast, but then actually comparing it to the actual. There you go. I sound like a management accounting tutor, Dave, don't I?
I do update it. Yeah. So as we go through, I will update the bank balance and I will then take out things that have been paid or things that have been received. So yeah, I do that.
See some comments from students. Living at home with no rent is a fantastic place to be. I was there when I first started work, and yeah, it gets an awful lot realer, an awful lot quicker when you've got your own property. You're either renting or you've got a mortgage.
I remember those days.
A couple of practical bits from me. I think something that I've used, particularly when me and Ellie then started kind of sharing stuff in a joint account, is maybe having a few separate bank accounts. We've certainly got one that the wages go into, and then it goes off to a couple of other accounts. One particularly that I've got a debit card to that hasn't got all of the money in there. So I can't be tempted on a night out to go and extract more than I really should do. But I think something that you thought about, Dave, was it's now easier than ever to have multiple bank accounts and with online banking to move stuff around.
Absolutely. I've got a bank account with I bank with Metro Bank, and with Metro Bank, you have their banking app, and literally within a couple of taps, you can set up another current account. Now, that it doesn't mean that you've got a current account with, you know, another overdraft or anything like that. It's literally just another division of your account. So I think in the next 10 minutes, I could set up 20 accounts. So if I wanted to kind of make sure that I'm budgeting for expenditure, I could say, okay, I'll get my wages into this account, you know, on the last working day of the month. But then I'm going to channel off this amount of money into this account to cover my mobile phone, and this amount into this account to cover, you know, my car payments. So the money's sitting in those other accounts, I don't touch them. Make the payment from those accounts, and whatever you've got left in your main account is what you've got left to spend on other things. It's something that I do for one or two things. I don't have, you know, a separate one for my razor blades that come through once a month and a separate one for Netflix. But it is quite a nice way to make sure that you're meeting some of those important obligations, and you understand the moment your wages are paid in how much, you know, money you have for other things.
It reminds me a bit of charity accounts. I don't know if back in the day when you were in practice, you ever got involved in doing charity accounts, or people listening might get involved in charity accounts, but they will operate with a series of funds restricted or designated for various purposes. And it's a bit like doing that for yourself, isn't it? Having your holiday fund where you can put some money aside. It also reminds me of, and they've gone out of fashion a bit now, these kind of Christmas pay-as-you-go accounts that you build up a pool of money to then pay for Christmas presents come December. But there's nothing stopping you doing that for yourself, just having multiple accounts and you put some money aside for various things that you're going to need in the future.
Yeah, I do that. I kind of put money aside every month as a kind of like my emergency fund money, which is, you know, if something goes wrong in the house, I've got, you know, money available. So the way that I do it is I transfer into premium bonds, just because it just takes a bit more time to get the money out. So you can't just be tempted. You've got to actually think about it a little bit. So there's kind of a 2-3 day period before you get it out. But that's, you know, what I do, try and tie some money up for a, you know, an emergency, just in case. And the one people always talk about is, if your boiler blew up, would you have enough money to fix your boiler? And I think it's a shockingly low number of people that actually do have, you know, the funds on hand that would be able to do that. So it's just, you know, trying to make sure that you're prepared in case there is a financial shock down the road.
Something else that dawned on me when we were thinking about this as a topic for conversation, if it was a business we were advising, something I'm much more comfortable doing because that's our background in accounting, not only would you look at the costs to try and reduce them, the stuff you've mentioned, but you'd look at the income. And I think from that perspective, I'm not being flippant, it's not easy to generate more income as an individual. And we've got to be very practical and sensible there. I am not advocating people taking out second jobs just to get more money. But there are some potential avenues for other income that you could generate. And one that got me thinking was selling stuff around you that is surplus to requirements. Regular listeners will probably recall me talking about moving my mum out of our family home at the kind of start of the year. And we found lots of stuff in her attic that was surplus to requirements. We talked about board games that I was bringing to home to play with my daughters. And something I did find was a hoard of my toys that I had when I was a kid. Some of them now Star Wars toys going back to the 1980s, which when I brought home, Ellie said, they're not coming into our house, in a box in the garage. And while I've been at home a bit more than I would have been with my leg recently, I've started taking pictures of them and it's been fairly easy to get them listed up on eBay. And I have now sold them for not thousands of pounds, but a couple of £100 here and there, which can make a big difference to add to your income. It was just stuff that was sitting there doing nothing. So maybe have a look around and think, are there any things, old mobile phone handsets, devices that you're no longer using, Xbox, PlayStation 4 games that are sitting there, maybe not individually going to go for loads of money, but it's better getting something than them just sitting there and wasting away.
Absolutely. It's so easy to do that. All you need is a camera phone and a PayPal account, and that's about it. And there are sites where you can sell pretty much anything. So if you've got furniture that you no longer need that's sitting in your garage, you can take a photo of it, you can put it on eBay, you can put it on Facebook Marketplace. If you've got clothes you don't wear anymore, don't fit anymore, don't like anymore, really, really easy, take a photo of them. You can get that. There are sites out there where you can list them. And just if you're not using them, you might as well sell them. You know, why are we keeping things, you know, around our houses that we don't use, that we don't like, that we haven't got, doesn't serve a purpose for us anymore? So, yeah, I absolutely agree. We actually, last week, we had to redecorate my eldest son's room. And so we took some furniture out of it, and that furniture went straight onto Facebook Marketplace. And then we sold it. Someone came along and took it away. And I could imagine that in years gone past, that would have probably sat in a garage for, you know, the best part of 10 years until you had a garage clearance, then it would have been taken to the tip. But yeah, it was relatively easy to do. Just take a photo, measure it up, say this is where it is, give a price. You know, we priced it relatively low to get rid of it, but I'm sure if we'd have priced it a little bit higher, could have got a bit more money, might take a little bit longer to sell. But you're right, Ben, we surround ourselves with so many things, and you know, do we need them anymore? My wife's going through a process at the moment of trying to sell all of my books because she says, I've read them, why would I ever need to read them again? You've just got them to look at and they're not very pretty. You know, let's list them online and get rid of them.
Something else that I think it's worth mentioning, and we're coming up for the time of year for it, is having a sensible conversation about Christmas with friends and family, something that actually in our family we've found quite liberating now once we'd broached the subject. It's always quite awkward and who's going to start the conversation, but I don't need to buy a present for my brother to show that I love him, and he doesn't need to buy one for me, particularly not an elaborate present with lots of money. So having a sensible conversation about setting sensible limits, or going down the avenue that I love, saying, shall we do a family secret Santa? I love Christmas and I'm not a Scrooge and I don't want people to not enjoy Christmas, but I get much more enjoyment of maybe spending £30 on one family member rather than having to think of presents for everybody. Is that something you've done, Dave? I know it's something we've also looked to do in the office.
Yeah, I did that with my dad and with my brother. We kind of had an agreement that I think I started a few years ago that we don't buy each other Christmas presents anymore. And instead, what we do is we take each other out for some, it's normally, in fact, it always so far has been to some kind of sporting fixture. So, you know, I would much rather spend a day with my dad and my brother going to a test match in the summer than exchanging a load of stuff that we don't actually, any of us want or need, and the novelty wears off pretty quickly. So yeah, we have a no gifts policy. And I think we do that with most of the adults in our family. Actually, we don't really buy presents for each other. We buy presents for the kids. Because, you know, that's for me, the most special time is seeing the kids open their presents. But yeah, I don't need to buy my brother a present, yeah, to say that I love my brother. I say he gets that every day from me. He doesn't really, but you know, he knows that. And I would much rather spend the time with them doing stuff than having some kind of present that I really don't want.
We're obviously coming up to Christmas, but it's not just Christmas. It's birthdays, it's anniversaries, you're going to say, Ben, you unromantic soul, you. But we don't spend lavish amounts of money on Valentine's Day anymore. We kind of did when we were a lot younger, but we both see the benefits in other things we can do that don't cost money, but it's just about spending time with each other. So having those sorts of conversations, I think, can be really powerful and actually help more than just yourself. Because I guarantee if you raise this with your friends and family, other people will say, do you know what? I'm so pleased you've said that, because we were thinking about having the same conversation.
Yeah. I mean, I actually said to my dad a little while ago, because he was, what the kids want for Christmas? I was like, I can't honestly think of anything that they need right now. Why don't you just take us all out for the pantomime? And the kids love that more than getting a present. You know, they're doing stuff, they're spending time with you. It's a lot cheaper for my dad to do it as well. He gets great enjoyment out of it being his day, taking the kids out, taking the whole family out. It just works so much better. So, no, I agree. Have those conversations. Now, my wife gets angry when I buy her stuff. It's like, why are you buying me stuff? I don't need it. You know, I'd much rather you save the money and we could go on an extra weekend away next year or something like that. So, yeah, have those conversations, because sometimes we end up just buying things because we think we ought to, not because people actually want them.
Final one from me, and I'm conscious we're getting near end of time and we need to wrap up, but the other place to have a conversation is at work. And this is not me saying all go tomorrow and ask your boss for a pay rise, but if you really are struggling, speak to your employer. We work with some great employers, Dave, don't we? And I know they would want to prioritize the well-being and the welfare of their staff. And part of that is financial well-being. Now, I'm not saying they will be able to pay you more money, but they might be able to come up with something. I remember back where I was training and I needed a new car because I was moving office location. And I went to my employer, explained the situation. They couldn't pay me any more money, but they were able to give me an interest-free loan, which really helped me out for 18 months. And I was able to pay it back over 18 months worth of salary repayments that just got me that car that I needed to move around. So I think if you don't speak to your employer, they can't help you if they don't know. But opening up those lines of conversation, I think, is really, really powerful, and something hopefully next week's Talk Money Week will encourage employers to do. There was a stat that 45% of them currently offer support for financial well-being, but I think that stat should be increasing as more employers realize the importance of a happy staff member, someone that is financially secure and certain, is going to be much more productive in their work.
I agree. There's a lot of employers that I deal with that have got schemes to support staff where where they need to buy a car or things like that. I even actually had, there's one employer that I work with who would help their staff with a deposit for a house, which was phenomenal considering the cost of house prices and the amount that you need as a deposit. But I stress that's only one employer that I've ever met that did that. And that was actually in your neck of the woods, Ben, based in Cambridge. So I can tell you who it is a little bit later on if you need to know.
Fantastic. Look, we are up for time tonight. I hope this has been a useful conversation. Myself and Dave talking about it maybe has given you the confidence or the empowerment to go and have the conversations with friends, with family, with employers. Next week is Talk Money Week. I will put a link in the show notes for the podcast with reference material, extra resources you can go to. Thank you all for listening. Thank you for downloading. Thank you for the live Zoom audience this evening. Dave, I will hand over to you to do the final wrap up for the podcast.
Yeah, thanks to everyone for choosing to download and listen to us. Remember, if you do want to get in contact with us, you can contact either Ben or myself. Leave a comment on the podcast feed. If you could leave us a review as well, that would be absolutely amazing. So it doesn't take more than a couple of seconds to give a review. And it does mean a lot to us. It does help us a little bit in terms of visibility online as well, in terms of where we rank on iTunes and things like that. So if you could do that, that would be brilliant. But until next week, stay safe, everyone, and we will see you yet again for another podcast.